She turned again, leading him back in the direction of the high palace. He slipped his hood down, smiling at her.
You were worried about me?
I'm touched. But it'll take more than a couple of goddesses to catch me. Not that I minded the attention given.
Goddesses? What happened?
Lydia scanned the streets for anyone that looked even close to as suspicious as Jonan did. The people nearby looked like ordinary civilians on standard business, but that didn't make speaking about complex matters of local politics less dangerous.
And lower your voice.
As you wish, Jonan whispered, taking a step closer to her and leaning in close. Vorain paid me a little visit. You saw the evidence of that. I'm fortunate that the broken mirrors are still somewhat functional. Otherwise, I would never have noticed your arrival.
Vorain was trying to kill you?
Lydia asked, quirking a brow.
I thought she had let you go previously. What changed?
It wasn't that, precisely. Actually, she wanted my help, so she broke all my things. Women are so complicated, you know. Goddesses are no different, it seems.
Lydia made a face at him at that remark, but he only flashed a grin back at her, one that he must have presumed to be charming, but came across as more obnoxious.
Continue,
she instructed through gritted teeth.
Well, we had some fun breaking into the High Palace, and found a few neat trinkets,
he said, reaching into his cloak. Lydia watched him warily, but what he withdrew was just a pair of books. He leaned close, whispering into her ear in earnest now.
Adon's research notes. Evidence that he was experimenting on the Rethri.
Lydia snatched the top book out of his hand.
Oh, let me see that!
Jonan flinched, shoving the second book back into his robes.
You don't have to be so grabby. I would have been happy to show you the highlights.
You can't blame me for being a little excited,
she pointed out, flipping it open.
This is probably the best lead we've ever found. Week 60. Mirella confirms that the procedure to remove the first Dominion bond has finally succeeded, although at a great cost. The subject is rapidly deteriorating. I have been attempting to find the correct syntax to renew the bond, but thus far my efforts have met with no success. If I had access to an artifact designed to create a bond, Mirella and I could find a solution rapidly. But for now the only possibility is to attempt every possible combination we can think of. If we fail, I fear our subject's life may be forfeit. We must succeed. Gods above,
Lydia murmured.
This is proof, but it's more than that. It has details about the results of his studies. This could contain the secrets of how he's faking his divine abilities.
It does contain a few hints of that, yes, Jonan said. I've only had a chance to skim it, so I'd like that back.
Lydia gave him a sad look.
But I wanted to read it.
Jonan folded his arms.
Really? Giving me baby eyes?
She handed the book back to him, smirking.
You're no fun at all sometimes. Also, I'm sure the Queen is going to want to see it. She's already been working to move against Adon, apparently for political reasons.
Now that's interesting news, but I'm going to have to insist on holding on to it. I went to some fairly substantial work to find that, risking life and so on, and I might have lost a friend in the process. A very beautiful and capable friend, in fact,
he said, grabbing the book back from her. Lydia stepped backwards, smirking.
You haven't lost me yet, silly. I'm right here.
Well, you are quite beautiful and competent, of course, but I happen to be referring to the goddess I was working with.
I'm afraid she didn't make it out of the palace,
he said with a grimace. Lydia leaned over, still trying to glance at more of the writing in the book.
What? What happened?
Now you're the one that needs to quiet down. We should really find a more discreet place to have this talk. Maybe in Talion's room? If we hurry, maybe we can catch him before he has to walk the paths of ascension.
Lydia quirked a brow.
Is he doing that today?
That's the rumor going around the palace,
Jonan said with a nod.
Vorain and I broke in last night, found the book, and got caught by another young woman. I didn't recognize her. Dark hair, tall, muscular. She attacked, and Vorain bought me the time to escape. I went out a window, hoping Vorain would catch up to me. She didn't.
And you haven't heard from her since?
Lydia asked.
And why did she want your help with this in the first place?
I put it in her head that Adon was experimenting on her brother, which is almost certainly true, and she knew I had sight sorcery, which is pretty rare, so she strong-armed me into helping her investigate.
Anyway, I tried to find her today. Swept the prisons. Even checked the Adelin room in the Low Palace, but there's no sign of her. I didn't dare go back into the place with the books, of course. I'm not risking another encounter with that dark-haired girl. She was at least as fast as Vorain, and probably stronger, he concluded, taking a deep breath after rambling his explanation.
Faster than Vorain? That's bad news. If she's working with Adon. But maybe Vorain came out on top in the fight. We have no way of really knowing at this point. And if Vorain won, maybe we can find her and get her to help us at some point.
All right, let's get to Talion. He should know about this before he walks the paths of ascension. From what I was reading in this book, it sounds like Adon is using artifacts for his experiments, too. Maybe he's using these paths as a trap to get the Sakes away from Talion, Lydia offered.
Interesting, Jonan mumbled.
You got that all out of looking at one page.
I do have an epiphany from time to time, Lydia said with a smile.
I don't doubt it. You're kind of scary when you think like that, but I think I like it, he said, pulling his robes around him more tightly.
Lydia blinked, not quite sure what to make of that comment. She thought she might be blushing, but fortunately, he wasn't looking in her direction. They continued the rest of the way to the palace in silence. As they approached the entrance, Jonan finally spoke again.
Should I be making us invisible or something?
Lydia shook her head.
No need. I'll just tell people you're with me.
He shrugged at that.
I suppose I won't complain about conserving my sight for a bit.
Good. Now let me do the talking for a while, she said, adjusting her glasses.
Lydia had no difficulty convincing the guards to let them inside, nor getting directions to Talion's room. By the time they found it, however, the room was empty.
That's not a good sign,
Lydia muttered. She turned around, seeing a servant she vaguely recognized walking down the hall.
Same servant who woke me up a few days ago, she recognized. He's not wearing his earring this time, but it's definitely him.
Young man, she called out, failing to remember his name. Excuse me. He paused, turning around, taking a step back when he saw Lydia.
Oh, court sorceress, how can I serve you?
To her side, Jonan tilted his head to the side, looking perplexed for some reason.
The man who is in this room, the one they call the Talion. Have you seen him today?
She asked. The servant nodded.
Oh, yes, m'lady. He went to the Pass of Ascension about a half hour ago. Would you like me to escort you there?
She shook her head.
No, that won't be necessary. I know my way about. Thank you, young man. You've been very helpful. I didn't catch your name.
Stuart, m'lady.
He bowed at the waist.
Is there anything else I can assist you with?
No, that's quite all right,
she said, nodding her head.
Thank you again.
He nodded and turned back around, hastily escaping from sight. Lydia stepped deeper into Talion's room, and Jonan shut the door.
Any of your mirrors in here?
Lydia asked. Jonan shook his head.
No, I haven't had a chance to plant one. I could right now, if you wanted to keep track of when Talion returns. I'm afraid my supply is running very low, however.
No, don't waste one, then. I think we should follow Talion into the paths and make sure he's safe,
Lydia explained.
That would be quite a risk, he stammered. Could we perhaps wait at the entrance for him to return?
Not willing to take a risk for Talion? I can't blame him, I suppose. He's one of Valian's servants, after all, not one of us.
Regardless of the justification, she couldn't help but feel slightly disappointed.
You can wait outside. Can you maintain an invisibility spell on me while I'm outside of your own sight?
Lydia asked. He grimaced.
For a bit, maybe. That's considerably more difficult, and one of the few places your style of incanted sorcery works better than mine.
The admission seemed to pain him, but Lydia found it somewhat comforting.
At least he has one weakness I can keep in mind for if we ever work against each other. Well, as long as you can get me into the paths, I don't think it'll matter. If there are any people lying in wait inside the paths, I can always tell them that the Queen sent me. The people guarding the entrance to the paths will probably know who should be inside, but once I'm in the door, I should be fine,
Lydia decided. He nodded.
All right. When do you want me to make us invisible?
Now? She nodded.
If he's already been in there a while, there's no telling what kind of danger he might be in, regardless of whether or not it's actually a trap.
Are you sure we're adequately prepared for this?
Jonan asked.
If we have to fight Adon, or Miros, or both, how do we handle those contingencies?
From my talks with the Queen and some of the other sorcerers, I think Adon has two primary power sources. One, I think he was somehow stealing power from the Rethri by manipulating their dominion bonds. Two, he's figured out some way to tap into the sorcery that was used to make some of the most ancient artifacts, like the Heartlands and the Sekhess.
Right, Jonan replied. And he presumably has at least one artifact other than the Heartlands already on hand. Something tied to the Dominion of Sound. Maybe Miros's armor with all the runes on it.
That's a good guess, Lydia admitted.
Adon also wears a ring with a large crystal in it. That could be another artifact.
Only ring I'm aware of that would qualify as an artifact is Hardigan's Star, which has a red gemstone. But I suppose others could certainly exist. The gods made many weapons and jewels that have been lost over time, or so they say, Jonan said, sounding contemplative.
Well, at least some of the Rethri have been taken care of, Lydia explained. I should have said this before, but I've been away the last few days escorting some of the Rethri out of the city, on orders from the Queen, no less. She's taking overt actions against Adon right now, and I'm not clear on why. The timing can't be coincidental. He sent a sorcerer to stop us, too, which means he's aware that the Queen is moving against him,
Lydia explained.
The Queen working against Adon should be reassuring me, but it's really not.
He shook his head. His expression looked troubled.
It gets worse, I'm afraid. The sorcerer who attacked us had far more dominions than he should have, as if he was using gifts of the gods.
Not all that surprising, actually, Jonan replied. Lydia quirked a brow. I read a bit further in that book, Jonan explained. Most of that research is on dominion bonds. He was trying to figure out new ways to both make and break them. He succeeded at breaking established bonds first, which is odd enough in itself.
I've heard that Lady Ayara has a way of stealing dominion bonds, but I'm sure you'd know more about that.
She gave him a pointed look. Jonan winced.
Legends indicate that the Vakas, in general, have a way of stealing sorcery from others, yes. Obviously, the Lady of Thieves would be the most famous case, and I do suspect her abilities would extend to moving dominion bonds from someone to herself. That doesn't sound precisely like what Adon was doing, however.
Well, at least he doesn't seem pleased to work for those monsters.
How can you work for creatures like those? You don't seem like the type of person who would approve of the way the Vakas behave. They just take things away from ordinary people.
It's direct opposite of what the gods are supposed to do,
Lydia said, realizing how harsh her words must have sounded after they came out. He turned his gaze away from her, a sad look crossing his face. The Order teaches that the Vakas only use their power against criminals and threats to the world as a whole. Jacinth assassinates people who are too politically connected for the law to touch them. Ayara steals relics of power from despots and tyrants, turning them over to the Preserver. His tone softened, and he looked back to her. Valian protects his people. His children are supposed to be an extension of that.
I know that you say supposed to, she began, but his expression soured. We can discuss this another time. Thank you for giving me some context on your side of things. What precisely do you think Adon was trying to do, if it's not like how the Vakas work?
I don't think he ever discovered a way to move a bond directly from one person to another. Rather, he was trying to break bonds on Rethri and replace them with different bonds, like changing a Rethri's bond from flame to stone, for example. He would make attempt after attempt, and someone named Morella would gather information from his tests. She seems like she's his partner in all this. I think she's a former paladin of Cytira.
Lydia tilted her head to the side. Morella? A paladin of Cytira? Why do you say that?
There are references about them being together at the Citadel. I think they grew up together. And when he was excommunicated, she went with him. From the notes, she seems to have types of sorcery that he doesn't, so he needed her for his research.
Knowledge and memory sorcery,
Lydia considered.
Both commonly practiced by paladins and priests of Cytira. I learned the former myself, but never the latter.
In this research, you're saying they succeeded?
Lydia asked absently, knowing she had already experienced the answer. It seems so. They managed to break bonds first, but wisely he didn't include any details. After that, they struggled for years to try to fix bonds they had broken, and from there I believe they found a way to make dominion bonds through some new method. A way that works on humans, not just Rethri, he explained. One of the people he seems to have managed to give new abilities to is a sorcerer named Verudin. That was the man you were sitting with at the arena, correct? Lydia nodded.
Yes. That might explain his bandages, actually.
Jonan quirked a brow. Bandages?
Verudin has been wearing bandages on his right hand for at least several days. He claimed it had something to do with trying to teleport the Sekhess out of its scabbard. But I tried using sorcery on the sword myself, and I never triggered any sort of defenses.
She paused for a moment, considering.
Talion told me a while back that the only thing keeping the sword in the scabbard was his own metal sorcery. Maybe Verudin hadn't figured out what was locking the sword in place, but he didn't want anyone else experimenting with it either.
She took a breath, adjusting her glasses.
We've been seeing unusual ruins in several locations, all around the Asharan, on Myros's armor, and possibly those markings around the eyes of the Rethri children. What if those are Dominion marks, like the ones on the Sekhess? They could be the mechanism by which Adon is giving new sorcery to humans, and Verudin's marks are concealed beneath bandages.
Jonan muttered. Well, that sounds plausible, but dangerous. I studied reports on attempts to perform the Rethri Dominion bonding ritual on humans several years back. The reports concluded that humans naturally excrete excess Dominion essence. It's a protective mechanism. If you saturate someone in the power of a particular Dominion, they will excrete it as quickly as they can, until their body eventually just breaks down and dies. Lydia brushed a strand of hair out of her eyes.
A localized mark might function differently. Since Dominion-marked items are so rare, I've never had a chance to study one for any length of time. It's possible that a Dominion mark can contain essence in a specific location, rather than spreading it across the entire body.
Well, that's just fantastic, Jonan scratched at the stubble on his chin, shaking his head. In a worst-case scenario, that means he could give any person, including himself, access to any or all Dominions. We need to think about what might be restricting him, if anything, and any weaknesses this might provide.
Verudin's bandages, or rather the flesh beneath them, appeared to physically bother him. It's possible that whatever procedure he uses to make the marks is uncomfortable or damaging.
The markings around the children's eyes, Jonan half whispered. They could have been burned on, like a brand.
Permanently damaging the skin does seem like it might be necessary for making a Dominion mark. That might somewhat limit the rate at which Adon would apply these marks, she noted.
Good. What else? Resources, perhaps? He'd need planar essence for a specific Dominion to make a mark, I assume, Jonan noted.
Maybe, Lydia said uncertainly. Or some sort of alternative power source, like the Rethri themselves.
Or the artifacts he's been gathering. Lydia nodded grimly.
Yes. And it's also possible that the Dominion saturation that you mentioned earlier could still happen, even with his new method. That might limit the number of marks he'd put on himself. At very least, until he's tested the process on others.
Well, that's a slight comfort at least. He also might be limited by his vocabulary, Jonan mused.
Vocabulary? What do you mean?
Maybe that's the wrong word for it, but if those runes are Dominion marks, they most likely correspond to specific spells or keys. He might need examples of them to make copies, Jonan offered. Lydia quirked her lips to the right, mentally debating that line of logic.
That implies that there's something intrinsically linking the shape of the runes to some sort of function. As you've pointed out to me yourself, words have no real meaning for casting sorcery. They're just a helpful tool. Why would these runes function differently?
That's an excellent question, and one I don't have a good answer to. Maybe it really is the language of the gods, he offered.
That doesn't explain anything in itself. Language of the gods doesn't automatically mean words cause specific effects,
she noted out, pointing at him with a finger to add emphasis. Fair? He raised his hands defensively. I knew it was a bad argument, but I didn't have... Okay, better idea. Maybe it's not the shape of the rune that matters, but maybe when the gods made the first Dominion-marked items, they always put specific spells in specific runes. If it was a language they could read, that could have had a useful function. Looking at an item, they could determine what the function of the object was, and maybe even how to activate it.
That would mean that in order to learn how to make more marks, He'd need to find existing items with the same marks and learn how to copy their function,
Lydia considered aloud.
Yes, that would explain a great deal about his behavior, and why Viruddin wanted to keep the rest of us away from the Sekas. He must have realized how valuable the runes on the blade would be for research.
All right, this is good information, but we still need to go figure out what's happening with Talion.
If we're right, they could be trying to take the sword away from him right now,
Jonan concluded.
Right. Let's go then. We should try to avoid engaging Adon and anyone else with him in direct combat until we have a better idea of their exact capabilities. For now, I'm going to put a defensive spell on both of us, and we'll try to focus on extracting Talion and escaping to rendezvous with the Queen. You're going to have to wrap your invisibility around us, rather than targeting us directly. Otherwise you'll trigger my barrier like you did a while ago. Does that sound like a good plan?
Sure, Jonan offered. It sounds like a great plan. I look forward to seeing how it falls apart. Lydia grinned.
You're cheerful today. Ready to go?
As ready as I'm going to be, he muttered.
Dominion of Protection, fold against my skin and teach me the secrets of the dominions that assault you,
Lydia incanted, renewing her own comprehensive barrier first. The tingle that spread across her skin lasted longer than usual, a sign that she was exerting herself too much. Still, susceptibility to bruising and sickness was a pleasant alternative compared to the maiming and death that her barriers had prevented. Next, she extended her hand, and Jonan took it.
Dominion of Protection, fold against his skin.
Jonan's skin shimmered briefly, and then he waved with his offhand while Lydia grit her teeth at the lingering, tingling sensation from her own spells. For a brief, disorienting moment, her own body disappeared, and then his, and then they both reappeared.
All right, we're invisible, but I've excluded the two of us from the effect. Keep holding my hand. It's easier that way.
She was mildly skeptical about that last part, but his hand was pretty warm and surprisingly soft, so she didn't particularly mind. The sorceress led the way down to the Paths of Ascension. Lydia had been to the door leading to the chamber in front of the Paths of Ascension before, but she had never actually been inside. A single guard stood at the door, a problem that could have easily been solved with violence, but she had no interest in hurting an innocent.
Even just opening the door would attract his attention, she realized.
Grimacing, she inched her way closer to the guard, glancing back at Jonan just before she came close enough to touch the soldier. Jonan just shrugged at her, so she shook her head and reached out, touching the man's cheek with a hand.
Sleep.
She felt a tingling sensation in her hand as the dominion of dreams surged through her. The guard didn't even have a moment to register alarm. He simply collapsed, and Lydia stepped in to catch him, laying him gently down on the ground. Glancing side to side, she detected no other onlookers, and she dragged the guard out of the way of the door.
Am I still invisible?
She whispered to Jonan. She could have checked with a spell, but she didn't want to tax herself further.
Yeah, he confirmed. As long as you stay close, keeping you invisible isn't particularly taxing. Can you get him too?
She asked, indicating the sleeping guard. Jonan gave her a nervous look.
Sure, as long as I wait right around here. That's going to be a problem. I could drag him to a side room. He should be asleep for a while, but someone is going to notice his absence eventually, and my sleep spell isn't going to keep him asleep forever. He'll probably raise the alarm as soon as he wakes up.
I'll drag him into the room with us, Lydia decided. Make him invisible now, and then you can keep him invisible while I go into the paths.
Jonan nodded, waving a hand. A shimmer of light washed over the surface of the fallen guard's body. Lydia lifted him carefully, straining against the dead weight.
Get the door?
The scribe inched forward, looking at the doorknob like it was a venomous serpent, and hesitantly reached out to touch it. After a moment, he turned the handle and slowly pulled the door open. The room inside was grand in scale and marvelous in design. Beyond a set of tall pillars, Lydia could just make out a pair of figures on the opposite end of the chamber, Adon and Myros.
Hope they don't hear us.
Lydia lifted the guard and slowly dragged him inside, while Jonan followed a moment later and closed the door quietly behind them. The sorceress laid the guard down to the side of the door so anyone walking inside wouldn't step directly onto him.
Maybe I should drag him further inside, she considered. It would take him longer to reach the door and raise an alarm if he had to wake up and run across this huge chamber to get out. On the other hand, he's more likely to wake up prematurely if he's close enough to hear people making noise, and Adon and Miros look like they're talking over there.
She left the guard where he was, gesturing for Jonan to move up with her. The pair crept forward, and Miros and Adon's voices became clearer as they approached.
"If you just let Byron take the throne, maybe Tylon would back down," Miros said, gesticulating with the Heartlance. The voice still boomed out from Miros' helmet with sorceress amplification, sounding clear even from dozens of feet away. "He's more than old enough, and we both know it."
"Age is irrelevant. The boy tried to have me killed."
A deep anger was evident in Adon's tone, and the older man's hands trembled as he turned his head away from Miros. The armored figure shook his head.
"We still have no evidence he hired those men."
"Morella will find something. I am certain of it."
"He's talking about those men that were discovered in the palace months ago. Everyone has been assuming they were targeting the prince, but if they were targeting Adon... Well, that certainly explains why Morella has been claiming to have more important things to deal with lately."
"It's been 2 months. They're long gone. If you try to delay the coronation again, it's just going to look like you're the one trying to hold on to all the power."
Adon's shoulders slumped. His response was too faint for Lydia to hear, but she didn't dare to quicken her step to hear more.
"That might be true. But is it worth risking a civil war?" Miros argued.
Lydia was close enough to hear Adon's response this time.
"It won't come to that," Adon insisted. "I've already taken precautions."
"I think you underestimate her level of support," Miros countered. "Have you noticed that most people don't even refer to her as regent anymore? She's just the queen to most people."
"Supporting her does not mean supporting the prince," Adon argued. "I have supported her for years, and I continue to. Keeping the prince away from that throne is the best for all of us."
Miro shook his head.
"How many delays do you think Byron will tolerate? He's already furious."
The sorceress perked up at that.
"Is Adon planning on executing a coup? That would explain why Tylon had the Rethri removed from the city."
Beyond the pair, Lydia could see a stairway leading downward toward a titanic metal door. Some sort of runes were etched into the surface of the metal, and the base of the door was immersed in a large pool of water.
"Resh, how am I going to get down there and open that without attracting any attention?"
"It's not about delaying. Tylon will have other things to worry about soon, and she'll eventually see that our current situation is superior to the alternative,"
Adon replied, folding his arms across his chest. The crystal on his ring flickered brightly as Lydia came closer, and she eyed it warily.
"That's definitely some kind of dominion-bonded item, but I'd need to get close enough to touch it to figure out specifics."
"I think you're deluding yourself. You can't have it both ways. The Queen Regent isn't going to be satisfied until her son is crowned. How do you expect to keep her?"
A large hole suddenly appeared near the top of the door, and a flood of water carried a figure, unmistakably Talion, out into the chamber. He had a long fall. Lydia rushed forward, but Miros was faster. The armored figure was a blur, leaving a trail of displaced water that led to the spot where Talion landed. A moment later, Miros lifted Talion from the pool, carrying him out to where Miros and Adon had been standing before. Lydia inched closer, her hand on the hilt of her sword. She was almost in striking range of Adon now, and closing the last few footsteps wouldn't take more than a moment. She glanced at Jonan. He was hovering a dozen yards further away, his expression neutral. Talion clutched the Sakess tightly in his right hand. Only one azure rune flickered on the surface of the sword, but even that sight filled Lydia with a sense of hope and exultation.
"The sword still glows. He's alive."
She turned her attention to a gemstone that had slipped out of Talion's hand when he hit the water. She didn't recognize the stone, but dominion-bonded gemstones were common in ancient legends.
"Could it be a piece of Cesseus?"
That does look like a Zixian structure.
Talion managed to push himself to a sitting position, but his arm had been badly mauled, and blood still trailed from several wounds. He glanced at Adon nervously, and then back to Myros. Myros retrieved the gemstone from the water, examining it for a moment, and then thrusting it toward Talion.
"I think you earned this," Myros said, and Talion took the offered stone.
"Thanks," Talion replied, his expression dubious.
He began coughing a moment later, and Lydia had to suppress the urge to step closer to inspect his wounds. The armor-clad god of battle reached down and hauled Talion up to his feet. The swordsman looked more than a little unsteady, which was unsurprising, given that he was soaked and still badly bleeding.
"Might not need to turn this into a fight after all," Lydia considered. "If they wanted to attack him, they probably would have done so already."
Adon looked Talion up and down, grinning.
"You've done very well, Talion. Just as I had hoped. Now, hand me the gem, and we'll see about giving you godhood, as you deserve."
"Or not."
Lydia stepped around behind Adon, putting her hand on the hilt of her sword. Talion wiped the water out of his eyes, and then groggily reached out with his hand, offering the gemstone to Adon.
"Here," he said. "Take it."
Adon stepped forward with an outstretched hand, but Myros stepped in between the two of them, raising the heart lance. Lydia looked back toward Jonan, finding him holding a potion bottle of some kind in his hand. He was circling around to a flanking position, and he nodded at her.
"Don't give it to him yet! He has some questions to answer first," Myros demanded.
The armored knight was standing in front of Talion defensively, as if expecting violence to break out at any time. Talion unsheathed a second sword, dropping it to the floor, and returned the Sakes to its scabbard. Lydia inspected the other sword, noting that it had an unusual red metal blade.
"Something from the vault? Probably not worth worrying about right now. Why is he putting the Sakes away? Is he too exhausted to fight?"
Myros continued to argue with Adon, and Lydia glanced over to Jonan. The sorcerer waved back at her, holding some kind of vial in his right hand.
"I nearly killed someone last night because of your lies. I nearly killed Talion a few weeks before, again, because of your lies. I will have no further part in this, and neither will you. You will answer for your crimes."
Myros raised the heart lance.
"Surrender now, and I will turn you over to the queen for judgment. Talion, are you with me?"
Lydia blinked at that.
"That's surprisingly pragmatic. With Myros on our side, this is going to be a lot easier."
Talion glanced at the two figures, and then bent down and picked up the red-bladed sword from the floor and stepped behind Adon. Lydia moved aside, giving Talion room. He was nearly close enough for her to touch, and she felt the sudden urge to reach out for him, but she restrained herself. Talion placed the red-bladed sword up against Adon's back. Adon quirked a brow.
"If you were going to try to make a coup, it would have been smarter to do it before Talion walked the path. Do you really want to do this, Myros?" "If I had done this before, Talion wouldn't have had the gem. I've been down there more often than you have. I know how the vault works. I knew he'd find it, and I know what it does," Myros explained.
"Please, tell me,"
Lydia urged Myros silently. She briefly debated reaching down to touch the gem. Talion was close enough, but she would have to speak aloud to identify it.
"Well," Adon said, "that's comforting, that you had a plan at least. Unfortunately, I must decline to surrender."
Lydia gripped her sword in both hands, preparing to strike.
"Now!"
Myros said, raising the heartlands and surging rapidly forward. Adon spun away, causing Myros' attack to nearly slam into Talion. The swordsman looked exhausted, struggling to deflect the accidental spear strike and taking a step back before launching an attack that came too late. A moment later, Adon had a hand on the heartlance and he snapped his fingers. Myros disappeared, the blue flash of some sort of spell effect nearly leaving Lydia blinded. Adon held the heartlance, smug confidence spreading across his features.
"Sad, really. I always liked Myros."
Adon spun the spear playfully.
You, I have less of an investment in, and you seem to have made your choice.
Talion nodded.
I have.
Unfortunate, Adon replied, raising his left hand.
Eru Volar Centaurus!
Lydia stepped in front of Talion just as a blast of blue-white flame emerged from his hands.
Eru Volar Centaurus, her comprehensive barrier spell reported.
The shield shimmered and cracked around her, the intensity of the single blast shredding the barrier to near uselessness. She stepped in a moment later, swinging the flat of her blade at Adon's forehead. A barrier, near identical to her own, flashed into existence just before her blade landed, deflecting the strike. Behind her, Lydia caught a brief glimpse of Talion desperately waving his hands over a spreading wave of blue flame on his shirt. Apparently, her barrier had failed to block the entirety of the blast. He seemed to be attempting to use flame sorcery to disperse the fire.
Interesting, Adon muttered, waving a hand.
Eru Volar!
Lydia struck a second time, but again, the barrier stopped her strike.
Esu Raval Taris!
Adon finished, waving a hand.
Eru Volar Esu Raval Taris!
Lydia saw in her mind as she swung a third time. Adon winced as her blade struck the barrier a third time, making a noticeable crack in the shimmering protective field.
That was a spell to break my invisibility, Lydia realized, and it took down what was left of my barrier.
Adon slammed the heart lance into the stone floor, causing golden lines to spread from the impact point upward across the spear. As the glowing lines reached Adon's body, they spread across his hand and into the sleeve of his robe.
That's new,
Lydia considered, making a high cut toward his exposed shoulder. Adon raised the spear into the path of her blade, and the impact triggered a backlash of force, sending Lydia skidding several feet across the floor.
Ah, Adon said. Lydia, impeccable timing. I hadn't realized you were back in the city yet. I don't suppose you could convince your friend to surrender.
Talion charged straight past Lydia, his clothing no longer aflame. Red metal arced at six angles in rapid succession, only to be met with the Heartlance's steel each time. Talion somehow held his ground against the sorceress impact triggered by each parry, but blood still flowed freely from a wound on his right arm, and his chest was ravaged with burns. Lydia shot a glance toward where she had seen Jonan last, but there was no sign of him. She grit her teeth and stepped forward again, swinging low at Adon's legs to make an opening for Talion. The swordsman took her cue, flanking to the left and swinging at Adon's shoulder, but Adon simply swept the spear in a half-circle and parried both strikes, knocking both attackers away. Adon didn't even try to launch any counterattacks. He just calmly raised his spear as Talion hurled a metal sphere in his direction, knocking the ball aside.
He's faster than he should be, Lydia considered. He's supposed to be a former priest, not a warrior. Talion is exhausted and injured, but not sufficiently to account for this difference. The Heartlance must be making him faster, in addition to causing that kinetic impact every time we strike it. Motion sorcery, probably. If I could get it away from him...
Lydia took a different tactic, swinging the flat of her blade at Adon's hand. He stepped back, sweeping the flat of the spear upward in an attempt to catch her under the chin. But Lydia sidestepped that and drove her blade back downward, making an opening for Talion to launch an attack of his own. Talion took the opening, but not in the way she expected. He rushed forward and slammed his uninjured shoulder straight into Adon, only to bounce off of the sorcerer's barrier. Adon looked momentarily stunned, so Lydia swept her blade into the Heartlance and dragged it downward toward Adon's fingers. The sword connected, but the flickering barrier held, preventing any damage.
Resh! How is he maintaining that barrier through so much abuse?
Enough of this,
Adon said, releasing a hand from the spear to point at Lydia.
Dominion of Protection,
she rushed to incant, stepping backward as she realized his intent.
Eru Volar!
Fold against my skin!
Centaurus!
Adon finished. Lydia thought she saw his ring flash for an instant before the blue-white fire consumed her. Chapter 15 Unsheathed. The jet of flames washed over Lydia's body, while Talion pounded with futile fervor against the shimmering barrier of energy around Adon, his strikes failing to even make a crack. When the fire faded, Talion saw nothing where Lydia had once stood, save the puddle of molten slag that had once been her sword and a pile of bone and ash. Without a word, Talion dropped the red-bladed sword.
"I didn't mean for it to come to this,"
Adon said, sighing, and moving the Heartlance back to a defensive posture.
"You're a monster,"
Talion muttered. Adon raised an eyebrow.
"Am I? A matter of perspective, I suppose."
Talion lowered his hand to grip the hilt of the Sekhes, memories flooding into his mind.
"Never use this until you can control all 7 runes on the blade,"
his parents had insisted. He drew the sword, gritting his teeth.
"Lydia blocked his first attack to save me, just like she did with Istvan, only this time she didn't have enough left to shield herself afterward."
5 runes flickered to life across the surface of his blade. Lysari, Lysandri, Xeracillus, Coronir, and finally Eritar.
"Close enough."
Talion lunged forward, and Adon raised the Heartlance, showing a hint of concern for the first time. The Sekhes flashed silver, smashing into the Heartlance, leaving a deep gouge in the surface of the metal and driving Adon a step back. One of the golden lines faded from the spear. Adon hissed, drawing his left hand back, looking prepared to cast another spell. Talion swung again, his blade parting the air and striking the Heartlance a second time, creating a spark of light as the blade cut a chunk of metal out of the shaft of the spear.
"Eru Elan Lav Kortaris!"
Adon yelled, and a pulsing shockwave emanated from around him, knocking Talion backward and off his feet. The swordsman landed several feet away, his head throbbing, his consciousness fading. He could see some sort of faint green structure surrounding him. A barrier? For a few moments before the green gemstone slipped free from his hand.
"I need to get up," he told himself, gritting his teeth.
He maintained his grip on the Sekhes, attempting to push himself to his feet. The runes on his blade were flickering and dying, with only 3 of them remaining visible. His injured arm screamed in his mind, and his vision swam as he saw Adon pointing his hand toward him, readying for another spell.
"Eru Volar Shentaris!"
came a voice, but it wasn't Adon's this time. A blast of blue-white fire enveloped Adon, emerging from a figure that appeared to his right side, his right hand blazing with fire.
Varudin.
Adon spun toward Varudin, gesturing with his own hand, immediately stopping the tide of flame. The sorcerer seemed uninjured, but the barrier around him was still visible, and Talion thought he could see tiny cracks in the surface.
"You swore that the other sorcerers would not be harmed!"
Varudin advanced toward Adon, balling his hands into fists.
"Lydia made her choice."
Adon stood up straighter, raising his left hand in a warding gesture.
"She attacked me. You saw that."
"You didn't have to kill her!"
Varudin raised his bandaged hand, unclenching his fist and pointing his palm at Adon.
"Eru Volar Shentaris!"
Adon didn't even wait for the flames to reach him this time. He just waved a hand in the air, causing the fire to vanish. Talion braced himself, gritting his teeth, and made another attempt to push himself to his feet. He managed to regain his footing, but he stumbled backward, nearly falling back to the floor.
"Idiot!"
Adon shook his head, taking a deep breath.
"I gave you everything you have. Every opportunity, every power, every gift. I can take them away. I can turn them against you."
Adon clenched his off hand, gritting his teeth, and Varudin's bandaged hand burst into flame again, but this time, the flames spread upward across the sorcerer's body, burning his own flesh. Varudin screamed, reaching down with his other hand, only to burn that as well. Talion steadied himself, focusing on his sword, fighting to reignite the 5 runes on the surface. They flickered back to life, and he could feel them begin to drain his already flagging strength.
"Not all of them!"
Varudin yelled, vanishing from where he stood. He reappeared next to Adon a moment later, slamming a blazing fist toward Adon's face. The barrier manifested instantly, broad cracks appearing as it shuddered at the impact of the strike. Talion charged. Adon shoved the Heartlance at Viruden, aiming at the center of his chest. The tip of the Heartlance pierced straight through Viruden's torso, and the sorcerer shuddered at the impact, and then vanished. The swordsman closed the distance in a few moments, bringing the Sakess downward in a diagonal slash aimed for Adon's exposed fingers. The robed sorcerer stepped out of range, releasing his right hand from the spear to level it toward Talion.
Eru Volar!
Talion stepped in close, slamming the wings of his weapon against Adon's barrier. Cracks spread broadly across the surface, but the shield held. Adon moved his hand to follow Talion as the swordsman attempted to circle around behind him, continuing his incantation.
Shen Tauris!
The sorcerer finished. A wave of fire emanating from his hand. This time, Talion was ready. His weapon sang in a horizontal slash, the silvery edge catching the flames as they emerged.
Surround!
He commanded the fire. The fan of flames shifted in direction, surging and collecting around the edges of the Sakess, forming a whirlwind of incendiary azure. Talion grit his teeth, emitting a low growl as his body shivered in complaint. Turning aside the weaker flames that had made it past Lydia's barrier had been difficult enough. Manipulating one of Adon's entire spells was beyond anything he had previously attempted. Runes flickered and died on the flat of his sword, the fifth, then the fourth and third, mere moments thereafter.
His barrier is weak, Talion considered, taking a step forward. I could obliterate him.
Shuddering with effort, Talion slammed his sword into the ground, burying the vortex of fire in stone. The marble warped and cracked around the encased weapon, the death knell of the sorcerous heat. Talion hesitated only a moment before moving to unsheathe the sword from the earth, but that moment was all the time Adon needed. A surge of speed carried the sorcerer forward, the Heartlance aimed for Talion's chest. The swordsman reacted quickly, abandoning his blade and stepping backward and to the right, but the spear was too fast, piercing deeply into the flesh near his left shoulder and stopping as it scraped against bone. Talion screamed, his body shuddering, and grabbed the shaft of the lance with his right hand.
Bend!
He commanded the metal shell, gritting his teeth. The metal gave no reply. Adon ripped the spear out of Talion's shoulder. The swordsman's own grip failing to restrain the older man's movement. Talion gave a wistful glance at his own weapon, still stuck in the stone, too far away for him to hope to reach. Talion urged his body to move, but succeeded only in falling to his knees. His strength was gone. The blue-robed sorcerer raised his blood-stained spear, preparing for a final strike. A loud crack sounded behind Adon, and Talion found himself blinking in confusion as the sorcerer spun around.
Sleep! Came a woman's voice, and Adon collapsed unceremoniously to the ground.
The Heartlance flashed blue and vanished. Lydia stood above Adon, her saber pointed downward at the sorcerer's unmoving form, her gaze evaluating the sight before her. Talion fell backward, catching himself on his slightly less maimed right arm, and burst into uncontrollable laughter.
I saw you die,
he managed, sinking the rest of the way to the floor. He shivered uncontrollably, reaching out to grope at the spear wound in his shoulder.
I was sure you had died.
You saw one of Jonan's very convincing tricks,
Lydia corrected, jerking a thumb to her right. Jonan appeared nearby, grinning, and took a bow.
I'm not much good in most fights, but tricks, yeah, that I can do.
Lie still, Lydia insisted, walking over to kneel at his side. You're in pretty bad shape.
She winced as she inspected his wound, using her saber to cut off a long section of cloth from the bottom of her robe. Talion began, wincing as Lydia pushed his hand to the side and began to wrap the makeshift bandage around his shoulder wound.
What about Viruden?
Also me, Jonan said with a grin. Viruden was never here. Between reading Adon's notebook and what Lydia told me, I knew enough about him to give a brief performance. I'm fortunate that illusions and teleportation are nearly indistinguishable in the midst of a fight.
Lydia glanced over at Jonan, while still applying pressure to Talion's injury.
That doesn't explain how you were managing to damage his barrier, though. It looked like you were using Adon's spell against him. How? I've tried using his incantation a dozen times. It doesn't do anything by itself.
Just another trick, sadly. You reminded me not to try to erase us when I was using the invisibility spell, since it would trigger your barrier. I figured his barrier probably worked similarly, and that an illusion that was designed to attack him would trick the barrier into expending power to defend, Jonan explained, a smug expression on his face.
Talion turned to Lydia, who was scowling. She didn't look satisfied with Jonan's explanation, but Talion was far too exhausted to press the issue. He was having a hard time even keeping his eyes open.
Lydia glanced around the room, and then looked back toward Talion. Stay with me, Talion. We're going to get you to a healer. Do you know what Adon did to Miros?
Talion shook his head groggily.
No, but it didn't look like his usual attack spell. I assume it was an actual teleportation spell.
I was thinking that too. We'll have to—
The entrance door to the chamber opened. Talion lifted his head slowly, seeing dozens of soldiers pouring in.
Oh, only a dozen more? Sure, I can handle that. Just as soon as my arm starts working.
Lydia moved away from Talion, ducking down near Adon's collapsed form. The swordsman blinked, uncertain, but he had enough presence of mind left to renew the pressure on his wound. A regal figure approached amidst the soldiers, standing tall and wearing a glittering crown.
Queen Tylan, Lydia said. You should probably kneel.
It took Talion a moment to realize that Lydia had been talking to Jonan, not to him. This was good, since his legs didn't seem to currently be listening to his own orders, and certainly not to Lydia's. The soldiers encircled them quickly and methodically, but kept a distance as the Queen Regent continued to approach.
Sorceress Lydia Scryer, the Queen Regent called out. You may rise. Care to explain this situation?
Lydia stood, dusting herself off.
I witnessed this man, who had claimed to be the deity Adon, confess to Miros that he had performed tests on prisoners that resulted in their deaths. A confrontation ensued, in which he cast a spell on Miros. Our guest, Talion, heroically rushed to Miros's defense. During the conflict, Talion, she motioned to the injured swordsman, and I were able to incapacitate the impostor.
Talion absently noted that Lydia had omitted any mention of Jonan, which he deemed to be a wise decision.
You have all been very brave, Queen Tylan said, and you are to be commended. We will investigate the identity of this impostor immediately.
She snapped her fingers.
Soldiers, bind that impostor and have him transported to Court Sorcerer Sethrich.
Talion is badly injured. May I borrow some of your guards to help carry him to the surgeon?
Of course.
The Queen Regent waved a hand to a group of the guards.
You four, assist them.
Four of the armored soldiers approached. Talion remained wary, but he had to admit, his methods of defending himself were rather limited.
Sword, he mumbled weakly.
I'll get it,
Lydia said, sheathing her saber. She walked past him, kneeling at the base of the sekes and putting a hand on the grip. She waited a moment longer than seemed strictly necessary, and then drew the blade from the granite floor. The sorceress winced in surprise as the blade emerged, bringing a moment of panicked clarity to Talion's fading senses. Not a single rune remained lit on the weapon.
In the scabbard, quickly, he urged her. Don't touch the blade. Don't even put anything near the edges.
Lydia was quick to comply, rushing to him and reverently sliding the sword into the sheath. They both breathed a sigh of relief when the blade was secured within. As the soldiers took positions around Talion, Lydia retrieved the green gemstone from where it lay on the palace floor and shoved it in a pocket. After a moment, she picked up the red-bladed sword as well, and then moved back to Talion's side.
Ready to stand up?
She asked, offering him a hand.
Not really,
he replied blearily, but he took her hand anyway. She pulled him to his feet with surprising strength, catching him when he nearly collapsed into her. He shivered again, and she pulled him close.
One of you, put an arm under his other shoulder,
Lydia instructed. One of the guards rushed over immediately, and Talion relaxed when he recognized the man.
Oh, hey, Landon,
Talion said, smiling weakly and offering the man his injured arm.
Long day.
Landon gave him a bright smirk, taking Talion's arm carefully, while Lydia maneuvered around to support him from the other side.
"A little," Talion admitted.
"Who is this?"
the queen asked, gesturing at Jonan.
"My new apprentice,"
Lydia replied instantly, offering the red-bladed sword toward Jonan. He stood, took the sword, and took up a position at her side. The queen regent nodded to that, seeming satisfied.
"Very well. Come speak to me after you've left the injured men with the surgeon."
Talion sighed. The idea of Lydia leaving his sight again making him feel more than a little nervous, but he reassured himself that she seemed to have things under control.
"This is probably exactly the type of thing the queen wanted," Talion realized. "With Adon incapacitated, she has no competition for control of the city."
With that in mind, Talion allowed Lydia and Landon to carry him out of the chamber and to the surgeon's chambers. Chapter 16. A Few Key Explanations. Lydia sat beside Talion's bed, reading her copy of The Nature of Worlds. The familiar pages comforted her, easing the tension in her back that had continued to grow since their confrontation with Adon.
"My everything hurts."
Lydia nearly dropped the book, standing up in her chair and turning toward Talion.
"You're awake!"
Not so sure about that."
Talion attempted to sit up, but she gently placed a hand on the center of the blanket that covered his chest.
"Slow down. If you sit up too fast, you could tear your stitches," she explained.
Talion frowned.
"Why are you spinning? I mean, it's very impressive, but..."
"We had to force-feed you a couple potions to keep you stable. You had some very serious injuries, especially the spear wound in your shoulder. I made sure a real doctor took care of your injuries, but without the potions, I'm not sure you would have survived."
"Would have been fine,"
he insisted groggily. Lydia couldn't help herself from grinning.
"You scared me there. Don't ever do that again, okay?"
She moved her hand from his chest to take his hand.
"Okay. What am I not doing again?"
Lydia rolled her eyes.
"Getting into a fight with an angry god."
"Oh. He started it."
Talion raised an arm, pointing accusingly at the air for emphasis.
"Actually, I'm pretty sure Miro started it. From your expression, though, I don't think you're totally aware yet. Those potions must have had some sort of intoxicating effect." "It's kind of adorable."
She had used identification spells on the liquids before feeding Talion, of course, but those only served to tell her that the dominions associated with the herbs within, stability and life, were not dangerous. The alcohol-like symptoms might have been from mundane properties in the liquid, or perhaps this was just how Talion reacted to extreme trauma and blood loss.
"I'm hungry," Talion pouted.
"Okay, sweet thing. I'll make sure you get something to eat. Take it slow, though."
Talion nodded in affirmation. 2 days later, Lydia made her way to the Queen Regent's chambers. Jonan was taking a shift watching over Talion, but it seemed unlikely to be necessary. The swordsman was still in terrible shape, but he seemed unlikely to expire in her absence. And that afforded Lydia a moment to finally indulge her sorcery on something other than periodically checking Talion's condition.
"Dominion of knowledge, I invoke you," Lydia said, clutching the green gemstone in her pouch as she headed toward the queen's chambers. "Help me,"
appeared in her vision just for an instant where her identification results should have. She froze in her step, and the two words were quickly replaced with others.
"Dominion of life, dominion of earth, dominion of nature, dominion of spirits."
Lydia released her grip on the object immediately.
"The dominion of spirits!"
She had heard legends of such a thing. Speculation. But this was her first proof it even existed.
"Does that mean that this thing is alive? How could an object be tied to the dominion of spirits?"
She shook her head. 1 week with Talion, and now her identification spell never gave her comprehensible results.
"I'll try to identify the ring later. I can't risk setting off any defensive spells he might have placed on it while I'm still recovering."
She had slipped Adon's ring off his hand when she had knelt next to his unconscious body, and she hadn't had a chance to check it yet. She had, however, noted tiny runes etched into the surface of the metal. For the moment, It was tucked away safely in the pouch on her waist. Lydia arrived at the door to the